Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the fourth episode of BerlinBrigade.com podcast, brought to you by BerlinBrigade.com. As always, I'm your host, Dave Guerra, and I am glad that you could join me today. A very big thanks go out to the United States Army Europe Band and Soldiers Chorus for the intro music that we play and the outro music as well. It's Auf Wiedersehen. I do hope you are enjoying this podcast series. It is a lot of fun to put together and even more fun reading your emails about the podcast series. So if you got an email, you got a comment, drop it. I'd love to hear it. Just lets us know we're doing a good thing. And for those of you that did not serve in Berlin but are listening in, and well, we hope you continue to gain a better understanding of our time in Berlin as well as what our mission was while we were there. So without wasting any time, everyone fall in. Let's get episode 4 underway. As always, we will divide this podcast into three segments. Talk about the website, you know, updates, stats, numbers, issues, anything that's arisen since the last podcast, special announcements, and special guest interviews. This show is being recorded on Sunday, March 23, 2008. As always, I would like to thank everyone for visiting BerlinBrigade.com, the website that is, and of course listening to this podcast. Currently, the registry database is sitting at sitting at 2837. That's 2,837 names and email addresses. Wow, that's a lot. It's going to be interesting. Looks like we're moving quite on pace to get to 3,000 before the end of the year. And so, keep them up. If you hear or know of anybody that hasn't registered, let them know. Hey, it's free. Meet some old friends. I get emails all the time. Well, you know, that's beside the point. Let's see. Well, no, it is the point. That's what it's all about. So it's not beside the point. It is the point. It's about getting everybody together. So I have a couple of administrative notes. One is a standing admin note, because I've kind of mentioned it every podcast, and I guess I'll continue to mention it. If you want to change your email address, use on the registry, that is, please fill out the online registry form. In the comments section, please write change of address. This makes things a lot easier to process. The next note is about the registry itself. Okay, the database is one thing that is not automated on the website, meaning that I still enter all the names and addresses, to include change of address, by hand. The only reason I do this is to ensure that the integrity of the database is not compromised by automated web bots or visitors to the websites with malicious intent. You know, we've had a couple in the past, people just entering something just to see if we can get on there, but it never made it on there because, like I said, I still do it by hand. So this also means that the database is not immediately updated. I try to update it at least twice a month now, and now more so in conjunction with the release of a new podcast, which is pretty cool because it's at least twice a month now that we're doing it. And if you haven't gotten it by now, that's what I'm doing. It's every 2 weeks I'm trying to release a new podcast. And so far I'm on track, and things are, my schedule, my personal schedule and my professional schedule and my BerlinBrigade.com schedule are all finally starting to gel, so it all just kind of works out the right way. So again, please be patient if you submit your registry information and it is not immediately reflected online, okay, because it's not built that way. It's done that way on purpose. Again, to basically, like I said, ensure that we have a system of checks and balance and not just any information can get uploaded. The special announcements for this episode are, well, there's about three or four. There's four of them, I think, yeah. Anyway, here they are. Right now, the only way of listening to the podcast is to listen to it from the front page of the BerlinBrigade.com. And also on the front page, you will see a new image and a link to the movie Bratz, Our Journey Home, which is a Donna Musel film narrated by Chris Christopherson. This movie is about U.S. military brats. We've all seen them at every base we've been to. I'm willing to bet good money that even some of the Berlin Brigade soldiers were, in fact, military brats before they became soldiers. Heck, I was one of those military brats, you know, and so I trust me, I know. The link is on there. You go to the website, and just really briefly, just going to give you a description of what's going on there. The synopsis, it's a movie. It's called Military Brats. It's Bratz. There we go. Anyway, here it is. It's hard to imagine a military brat's childhood, moving from base to base around the world. They're at home everywhere and nowhere. There are 1.2 million children being raised in the military today. An estimated 15 million Americans are former brats. They include Jessica Alba and Robert Duvall, wow, Senator John McCain, Yep. And basketball star Shaquille O'Neal. It wasn't Shaquille O'Neal's dad, it was his stepfather that was the that was in the military. Bratz is the first cinematic glimpse into the global subculture whose journey to adulthood is a high-octane mixture of incredible excitement and enormous pain. Make no mistake, Bratz is not about the U.S. military, it's about their children who grew up in a paradox that is idealistic and authoritarian, privileged and perilous, supportive and stifling all at the same time. Their passports say United States, but they're really citizens of the world. Singer-songwriter and Air Force brat Kris Kristofferson leads us through the heart of their experiences, sharing intimate memories with fellow brats, including, wow, General Norman Schwarzkopf and author Mary Edwards Wurst, whose groundbreaking book Military Brats: Legacies of Childhood Inside the Fortress was one of the seminal inspirations for this film. Their stories reveal the peculiar landscape of their childhood, the culture that binds them together, and the power it exerts over their adult lives. A 7-year work of passion by independent filmmaker Donna Musel, Bratz features rare archival footage, home movies, and private photographs from post-war Japan, Germany, and Vietnam. Tell you what, I've already ordered the DVD. I'm waiting for it to come in. As soon as it comes in, I will let y'all know. But it's so far so good. I like it, and I guess it's because I am a former brat. Or still am, technically. It's just like this thing. You form a bond, and it's hard to break. So, again, if you are a military brat or have a couple of military brats of your own, then I invite you to check out the link. It's really cool. Check it out. The link is on the front page. I received an email asking when the 6 infantry logos will be made available. Well, folks, all I can say is be ready for the links to appear in the coming days for the cool 2-6, 3-6, and 4-6 stuff to come online there at the Cafe Press site. Bunch of cool designs and stuff coming up online for you guys. So, while the 502nd held on to the glory for all this time, 6th Infantry is now, your time has come. So I hope you guys enjoy the gear that's going to be coming out here real soon. Let's see, the next announcement. Yes, I've had a couple of emails asking when I was going to make the previous podcast available. I'm going to wait until episode 5 is online before I make the archives available to everybody. These will be free of charge and open to anyone and everyone that wants to listen. Okay? In a couple of weeks, the archives page will be online, so be on the look for it. Basically, what I'm waiting for is to just put some stuff on there that you have plenty of stuff to go. If this is you're just now listening to the podcast for the first time, we've had other episodes. And this way, it kind of gives you a bunch of episodes to listen to and not just wait every 2 weeks for another one to show up. So again, just be patient. It'll be up online soon. And like I said, I'm going to try to make it in conjunction with release of episode 5. Lastly, which also leads us into part 2 of our special interview with Inga. As you may recall, Inga and I chatted a few Sundays ago, and she's been giving us an update about what is going on in and around the former U.S. sector of Berlin. So this last announcement comes in the form of an email from Brian Brown to Inga, or to me through me, there we go. He writes that he is going back to Berlin and really likes the updates. He's going back in a couple of years, and he really likes the updates of what's going on now. And was curious to ask if Inga could take some pictures up in there and the other areas that she talks about in the interview here. Well, Brian and everybody, Inga mentioned the last time we talked that she has some images that she wants to send over as soon as she finds the drivers for the camera to download the images to her PC. So as soon as she gets that under control, she said we'll get them, and then we'll get them up online on the website as well. Guess what? That's it. That's it for That's it for the special announcements this time. Okay, now we resume our interview with Inga and I. This is part 2 of a 2-part series. And when we last left off, Inga was telling us what was going on over at Andrews Barracks. So technically, with all these private investment private firms that have come in and just snapped up all the U.S. property or what we held on to while we were there, then technically it's probably conceivable that I could go back to Berlin and buy my old room there on McNair.
Yeah, wouldn't you love that?
That would be interesting.
What's stopping you?
Exactly.
What's stopping you? Please. Yeah.
However, the dollar-euro exchange rate is not what we used to enjoy back in the day. That's pretty much for sure. But yeah, and that But that's a different story, and we'll talk about that at a different time. Okay, so we kind of talked about the Army locations. Let's talk about the let's talk about the Air Force location, Tempelhof. What's going on over there?
Tempelhof, you know, that everybody loves Tempelhof, everybody hates Tempelhof. You know, people just cannot make up their minds. And here again, you know, if you grew up in the West, you're very fond of Tempelhof. If you grew up in the East, you have really no association with it, but that's, you know, how I feel as a West Berliner going into East Berlin. There are a lot of, you know, Soviet monuments there or Russian monuments that I have no association with, and I'd be more than happy to say, you know, I can happily do without that. Why is that still here? Let's tear it down. Tempelhof has been still running as an airport, mostly for small, small jets, private jets. It was a wonderful spot during the Soccer Cup Championship in 2006. Mm. However, one person that I know who lives in the flight path, actually, of Tempelhof said it was absolutely horrible because the planes didn't have any time that they didn't have a, what's the term for it? You know, they didn't have to stop flying. They just flew throughout the night. And he said the noise that he heard in his apartment, it was just absolutely horrible. But other than that, during the day, you know, it's been run for the small jets. You can also, if you really want to go and see it, you have still have a chance by taking American Airlines, for example, via Brussels, and then from Brussels you fly right into Tempelhof. So you can actually, you know, still see the field, what it looks like. The Senate, the Berlin Senate, has decided to shut Tempelhof down. The reason for that is that Schönefeld Airport is being expanded as the new Berlin-Brandenburg International Airport, called BBI. They want to open BBI in 2010, supposedly. However, already at this point, they know it's not going to be open, apparently, until 2012. So the question is, if we have BBI open in the south of Berlin, why do we still need Tempelhof and Tegel, per se? Tegel is just coming up with another expansion. So Tegel will be held open, I think, about 2011, or right before Schönefeld Airport or BBI is going to be opened up. Tempelhof, on the other hand, the Berlin Senate wants to shut down, because they're saying it is endangering the prosperity of BBI, and therefore there is no need to have an airport in the inner city. On the other hand, they're saying that there are a lot of people that are not happy with the noise and the pollution that is going on, and also it is a danger because, you know, you have an inner city airport. And so, therefore, if a plane comes down, you know, then at that point, a lot of people may get hurt and killed. So, of course, we don't want to have that. But at that point, the question is, what are you going to do with Tempelhof if it is not a running airport? And that's a question that hasn't really been answered by the city government. They have asked the Berliners what to make out of it. Berliners were able to vote for it or submit ideas on what to do. But there isn't really a concrete concept, unfortunately, at this point. Yeah, Ralph Lauder of Estee Lauder Company came up with the concept of basically restorating the building and turning them into a private clinic for wealthy people. So that when they have an illness or something that they would like to have taken care of, they fly into Tempelhof, then are being taxied to a private facility, maybe like a surgery room, or I don't know what kind of treatments exactly they were planning, but they said it was either medical treatments or maybe some kind of wellness programs. And then at that point they would have their private facilities and have a short way to the airport, being taxied back to their private planes, and then leave the city. I think it was, and I hope I quote the figure right, I think it was a $93 million project that he had proposed that the mayor of Berlin, the governing mayor, Klaus Wowereit, with the SPD, the Social Democrat, declined to accept. He said that it wasn't necessary to do something like that, that the city could come up with other ideas on what to do with Tempelhof. So it is not really quite clear. There are a lot of ideas being bounced back and forth from both sides. But yeah, we don't know. So what has happened is that there has been an interest group that has filed a petition to vote on the Tempelhof issue. The city now allows for something like that. Beforehand in Germany, we did not know any such thing as petitions, you know, like you have in California, for example. But they did make that possible because they wanted the people, the citizens, to, you know, also have their vote and their say. And at that point, you had to file for that petition and vote on that. They had to reach, I think it was 20,000 votes, and I have to look up at the numbers one more time, I do apologize. But they got 30,000 votes saying that they wanted a referendum for the petition. Then they now said, well, you have to submit 170,000 signatures in favor for that petition. The city came up, or the people in the interest group came up with a little bit over 200,000 signatures. That said, we want to keep Tempelhof open. And now the question is, since you know the next step had been taken and over 200,000 votes had been cast, the question is now, when are we going to actually vote on the petition itself and find out about that? And the exact date is not known on that. So originally a date in August had been set, which of course that being close to the October deadline for the Tempelhof being closed was very close and nearby. So then the Senate said, no, we're going to take a June date. Now the possibility of an end of April date is here, and we'll see what's going to happen then. You know, we don't know. I can tell you this much, that the new BBI airport would mostly supply all air traffic, which means they're going to have small airplanes and large airplanes, and a lot of you that, you know, either have worked in the Air Force or are still involved with it, everybody knows that that, of course, is a bad concept. At Tegel Airport, a private group called Air Berlin, that are running inter-European flights, they actually need to use Tempelhof as overflow for their airplanes because traffic at Tegel is so bad that they don't know where to put additional airplanes. So they're just flying them over to Tempelhof, and they sit there by the Autobahn, and you can just drive by there and say hi and wave at the little plane that's standing there. So it's all very eerie and very ghostly here again, because it looks deserted. Nobody really knows what to do with it, and it's going to be a mystery in the future.
So, what can we do? Is there anything that we can do? I understand it's the citizens of Berlin, and it's their vote to call on what to do with Tempelhof. But is there anything that we as people who have a very close tie, very close relationship with Tempelhof, even though a majority of us were Army, there was still a tie there. Is there anything we can do here on this side of the Atlantic?
Right. Well, and I wish I had a good answer for you on that one, because yes, it's definitely a good question to ask. However, since nothing has really been decided yet, and in order to make sure that you can help, I think what probably would be a good idea is to look at some of the websites that are out there and just show your support to some of the people that have been organizing the efforts for Berlin. If you also think that the airport should be shut down for whatever reason, it might be a legitimate reason, I'm not going to, argue with that, it's at this point, it's more like a wait-and-see situation. We're very much in limbo, and it's a very uncomfortable place to be. Nobody really wants to talk about the subject, but, unfortunately, I can't give you a good answer on that, David.
So basically,
maybe in a couple of days when there's more news out, okay. I can provide you with a more.
Okay.
One thing that I found very interesting with all of this, and here coming back a little bit to the 60th anniversary of the airlift, which you know, we need to remember the 60th anniversary of the Airblitz. Nobody is doubting that. But of course, that's history and that's past. So the question is, if you want to do something, come up with a great concept on what to do with Tempelhof. The city has numerous times mentioned that they want to open up a park there, so people can just, you know, stroll along the park and be in recreational areas. But yeah, you know, you can still issue your ideas. If they're going to be heard or going to be accepted, that's a different story. I don't know about that. But you know, that's like I said, that's all I can tell you at this point.
Right. So it's right now it's just more of a grassroots effort on our part here in the United States, writing letters, writing emails, and just kind of voicing our concern.
For example, yeah. And you know, what I meant to say earlier was that, you know, it's interesting to see some of the people that either have worked as civilians for the Americans at Tempelhof with the Air Force. They are coming around, you know, and if you listen to them and listen to their stories, everybody has something special to share. And here again, you know, you're hearing stories now that, you know, have actually been lying asleep for a long time. Nobody, you know, wanted really to talk about it, but now there's a strong sentiment that you know, we need to talk about this, and we need to keep the memory not only of Tempelhof alive. I think the airport pretty much, you know, has a will make sure that it has a memory of its own and will be remembered in the future. Colonel Halverson, our candy bomber, he actually said, Tempelhof is to the city of Berlin what the Statue of Liberty is to New York and America. And, you know, that's a very true quote. It certainly is the pathway to freedom for most of us, and those who have remembered it. Here again, you know, there are great stories coming about from all of this. There's a great new piece of Berlin history being written. And, you know, if you want to show your support, absolutely, you know, I'll be happy to give you my email afterwards, and you can send me some emails and tell me what Tempelhof meant to you. You know, that's you're more than welcome to do that. I would look forward to that.
Very good. Then, so anybody listening to the podcast, just drop me a note at podcast@berlinbrigade.com, and I will pass along the information over to Inga, and we'll get y'all in touch and get y'all together and see what we can do. Because, yeah, I mean, having flown out of Tempelhof on a couple of occasions and actually being there on other occasions for other things, it definitely it grows on you, and it does become part of who you are if you've ever served in Berlin. And then I would be hard-pressed to find somebody that served in Berlin to say contrary to what I just said.
Right. The main thing why people say Tempelhof should stay open is the fact that it is connected to public transportation. You are in the new inner city that most of you probably don't know or maybe have seen pictures on the internet or in the news. You're in the new inner city in about 15 to 20 minutes and you don't even need a car.
It's interesting. I was agreeing as well.
That's really what makes it so attractive, that you're so close to everything. You don't need the car. You have public transportation. And so at that point, you know, the question of how environmentally friendly are the airplanes versus how environmentally friendly is the effort of public transportation. If you look at the location of Schönefeld, then, you know, anybody who's living up in the north of Berlin has to take probably about an hour and a half to 2 hour drive just to make their way down there to Schönefeld. And, you know, transportation-wise, Tempelhof, it's just a great thing, you know. There are a lot of other cities worldwide that have more than one airport, more than two airports, that have three airports, or more, actually. And, you know, it would be a great thing to keep it open. But here again, I also understand the concerns of some of those that say, you know, we want to shut it down, you know, so. We'll see. It's going to be very interesting, that's for sure.
Wow. Definitely. I caught on to something you were kind of going to it, and I want to ask. You mentioned about, you know, taking people's information. Is there a special project you've got in the works, something you've got going on with stories?
That's
really
good of you to ask. I do work on a special project. And it came about because of my desire, actually, to say thank you to the Americans that were here in Berlin, the Berlin Brigade, per se. When I came to the States in 1993, I mean, I had been born into the American sector in West Berlin, for all those of you who may have heard may not have heard the beginning of the conversation. I grew up in the American sector. I grew up in Rudow, close to the wall. And I've always been living with the spirit of freedom that my parents instilled with me, that Americans and the other Western allies, we have to mention them too, have provided for us. There's no doubt about that. And I also need to correct the record. The airlift was the idea of the British. That, you know, the Americans made it possible, but the idea to help West Berlin, or Berlin actually in those days, came from the British. So we gotta give thanks to that.
Oh yes, without a doubt.
But, when I was in the States from 93 till 2005, I've met a lot of people that were very eager to find out. You know, I come there and people immediately hear I'm not from the States. So the first question is, well, where are you from? So I tell them, well, I'm from Berlin. And then they're like, oh, Berlin, Germany. Yeah, Berlin, Germany. Well, where are you from there? And some, at that point, the conversation would go either one of two ways. Either people had never been to Germany, so they didn't really know where Berlin was or what it was about, so I had to give them, I just gave them a little education on that. They were always very thankful for that. Those who had been to Germany, either because their parents had been stationed here and they grew up as kids, or they themselves had been stationed here when they were younger and now had families themselves, they were always like, oh, you know, West Berlin? Yeah, West Berlin. So, you know, here again, there was this big feeling of gratitude and appreciation. And in learning and in talking with most of the people that I've talked with throughout the years, I've learned that there was a big interest in the States about that part of German-American relationships and the German-American history. Now, going into the bookstores, I've discovered that there are no books actually on the Berlin Brigade, for example, which really was a vital and important issue. The German history pretty much ends with 1945 at the end of the Second World War. And then comes the Cold War. And so you may have a little section in between that talks about the airlift from June 1948 till September 1949. But then there's nothing really out there. There comes the building of the wall, maybe, August 13th, 1961. Mm-hmm. Then there comes maybe the Reagan speech, Mr. President, Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. We just had the 20th anniversary of that. But that's about it. And I thought, you know, this is really sad. Because here all these Americans were stationed here from the 40s till 94, and nobody remembers, you know, what happened here. Or nobody actually has put their place in history saying, you know, we really need to keep a monument. I mean, the buildings that we have in Berlin, they're dissipating. The people that have lived through it, they're more or less dying sooner or later, unfortunately. And I just stood there and I thought, you know, I need to make sure that some of the stories, you know, that the people here shared that were stationed here, are being brought back to life, you know, and what I'm saying is there are a lot of good historical books out there. There are a lot of good political books already out there, but there's nothing out there so far that will actually hold on to that memory and to that history for a younger generation. The younger generation, neither in the States nor here in Germany, knows even sometimes the term Cold War. They don't know anything about that. And I'm just determined really to do something about that. And I've really became convinced that I had to do something about that when I was in San Antonio in 2005. And on August 13th of all days, I'm going up to this huge supermarket, supercenter that everybody knows, with a W in the front and the T in the end, and the big parking lot. And I'm walking there to the entrance, and there's the student from a high school, from Ronald Reagan High School, and I asked him if he had any idea who Ronald Reagan was, and he couldn't tell me. And I thought that was really sad, and, you know, I don't really want to say anything bad about Ronald Reagan High School in San Antonio, Texas, please don't get me wrong on that. But this particular kid lacked the knowledge, you know, or even had the inclination of an interest. And so I asked him a couple of dates and a couple of questions, and I realized that because I had lived through some of the things that my parents and my grandparents had lived through some of that, that he became a little bit more interested because he had now a witness, you know, somebody who had experienced that. And I thought, you know, I need to take, what I want to find out is, what made the Berlin Brigade so special? What made it so special? Because everybody that I talked to, they paused for a moment when I mentioned even the words, you know, Berlin Brigade or Berlin in the 80s, West Berlin in the 80s. They pause for a moment, they relax, they get a little smile in their eyes, maybe a little start of a tear, they get this big old grin on their face, and you can clearly say, yes, those were the good old days. Boy, did we have fun. And I want to find out from any one of you who's still out there and listening and interested in that, what was it that made Berlin so special for you? I would be curious to find out maybe what your assignment was, what were the reasons why you were sent to Berlin. I've heard numerous topics on that issue. But what did you experience? You know, what made Berlin, being assigned to Berlin, so great? Was it the camaraderie? Was it just being in a foreign city, so far away from mom and dad, and maybe the backwoods of Indiana or some other lovely places in the United States? I really want to find out and learn more about that, and I would like to hold on to some of the stories, or as many stories as possible, actually. And I would like to, you know, share them in a book with the next generations to come. And what I also think would be a great idea in order to make sure that a younger generation is participating in that, maybe even come up, with a little DVD of games. You know, you had Doughboy out there, and I don't even know what Doughboy, if that still exists, if the buildings are still there. I think somebody said that there's a little bit still out there. I've recently seen some former aerial shots, and I thought, wow, this is great. You know, maybe make up some Doughboy games and put them on a DVD or on a CD, you know, and slap it in there. You know, things like that. And today I had the idea of actually contacting my old school that I used to graduate from and ask them, because I'm the principal still remembers me, and ask her if, you know, she might have students that would be interested in participating in that, because I would like to know, what do they know? What kind of information do they need in order to, you know, remember? Also, you know, what kind of questions would they ask? And here again, you know, I would love to hear from you, you know, hear your participation, your feedback, what you think about that. What do your own kids, if you have any, know about that, or your own family? Are these topics that people are still interested in these days? And, I mean, the history of West Berlin and the Berlin Brigade in particular is never going to come back anywhere else on this planet. We all know that. And so, therefore, I want to set a monument, you know, a legacy for all those who lived here. Also want to be sure that those two soldiers from the LaBelle bombing, you know, aren't forgotten. And anybody else, you know, who was here. So I just want to hold on to that. And, of course, in the end, you know, we were all like family here. I mean, there's no question about that. And I'm noticing that, you know, talking with you, David, or some of the other guys that I've met here in Berlin that, you know, either came back or decided to stay here. You know, you instantly connect, and we were like, wow, remember when, you know. And I'm just thankful for that. I'm just thankful to all of you. And I'm also very thankful, you know, that you made it possible for me, with your support, with your work here, to actually provide safety to my family, my late grandparents, my parents, and to me, that we were able to live and grow up in a free city, where we didn't have to be fearful, where we actually went to bed at night and we knew, you know, we were protected. And I'm like I said, I'm just very thankful for that. And I think, those 13 years that I have spent in the States, my tax dollars are not going to be enough, that I produce there in order to pay back, what you guys have done for us. I think there is no doubt about that. So, you know, that's what I'm currently working on, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So yeah, bring it on.
Okay, as I mentioned earlier, those of you that are interested in contacting Inga, please drop me an email at podcast@berlinbrigade.com, and I will forward your information over to Inga, and then she'll get in touch with you. And, you know, I've promised a couple of people I'm going to write my my story about Berlin and all that good stuff. And so Reinhard, you know, you're going to get a copy, and Inga, you're going to get a copy, and then from there we'll go from there. Yeah, it'll have to be a copy, both of you, because I don't want to write it twice. trust me, I'd much rather talk than write, but hey, you know, we got to do what we got to do, and then of course we'll do it. I'll do it without a doubt, I'm requesting everybody else that's listening in on the podcast here to go ahead and submit your information. Just send me a message, and I'll get it over to Inga. Get with her. I think her project sounds like a very good one, a very valid one. But as far as trying to repay us back, I don't think. And what I'm about to say is it shouldn't be taken as anything else other than this. You guys, the citizens of Berlin, can never repay us. You have given us so much more than you could ever imagine. You've given us more than money, that's for sure. More than, I mean, any dollar, any euro, any D-mark, anything could ever cover. The experience of us just being there in that city and doing our job and what we were there to do has been more than enough. And I speak to a lot of people. In the previous podcast, I asked the general what his thing that he misses most about Berlin, and he said the people, and that right there kind of summed it all up for all of us. It's really, you guys have already paid us back.
Thank you very much. And you know, if you could see that smile on my face right now and how happy that makes me. And I will certainly not let people know who asked me about that. You know, I will certainly let them know what you just said. I think they will still very much appreciate that.
Oh, we owe them so much, and it's not for anything else other than just, you know, they let us in. They let us in, and that bond will never break again. I think that's why we're still so, the group of us that still are on at the BerlinBrigade.com website or at the Berlin U.S. Military Veterans Association website, and over at the Berlin Brigade Wall Watchers on Yahoo, and over there at BerlinBrigade.de, and the memories of it Reinhard's trying to hold on to and build up and do. It's enough. It's enough. And just to have something there that we can all get together and say, hey, this is what this city did. This is what these people did for us. Not what we did for them. Not what we did for them, but what these people did for us. And that's a good thing. And that's, at the end of the day, that really signifies that, you know, if the wall never ever came down, we still accomplished our mission.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Yes. Yeah, there was a soldier that I met back in the day, and of course you meet many soldiers when you walked into McNair. But he would always tell me, you know, love conquers all, and I think that there is sometimes more to it than meets the eye when I recall that statement, you know, and what you were just saying, you know, is so absolutely true, David, you know, so. Yeah, it's just good. it's just really neat. And here again, you know, I want to keep something for everybody's memory, you know, so that you, when you, you know, leave this planet one day, and I do too, you know, we have something that we can pass on to the future generation. And how big or small this entire thing is going to be, it doesn't really matter. You know, it really doesn't matter. I just want to be sure that, you know, the sweat and the effort that you put in here is not going to be forgotten, you know.
Gotcha. No, I understand it. And no, it was definitely a two-way street. I mean, the citizens there had to put in their work too, just like we did.
Right.
You know, I mean, they put up with us road marching. They put up with us firing off those simulators in the middle of the night. They put up with us the convoys. They did their part, and that was just, it all worked together. And yeah. I think that's really what made it fun, is that nobody was out there overtly complaining. Nobody was out there overtly protesting us. It was all worked together because we were all in the same situation.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, definitely. And you know, when you look at the city today, it doesn't really, like I said in the beginning or earlier, it doesn't come across as such. The Allied Museum is doing a lovely job, you know, of preserving the history of it. There are some other establishments that are out there or groups that are very much in favor of preserving, or actually just preserving the history of Berlin. And here again, you know, there's a lot of history from both sides, you know, the French, British, American, or Russian out there.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go, for example, to Checkpoint Charlie, you don't really see a whole lot of that. The city has been, or the Senate and the city government, they've been trying to put up, a couple of ideas. When you go to Checkpoint Charlie, there's the size about the original booth that was at Checkpoint Charlie there. Are students, art students posing, you know, they bought the uniforms. They're posing there with flags, you know, for any tourist who is willing to pay them a couple of euros for that. You still have the flags there, but at the moment, and the city is trying to figure out a way on what to do with it, mostly because it's also become a traffic issue. The street is very, very narrow, as those of you who have surfed there may recall. And we've had a lot of, you know, tour buses going through it. So it's always very jammed. I mean, it works out in the end, you know, the pedestrians are looking out for the cars, and the cars and the bicyclists are looking out for the pedestrians. But it's an area that needs definitely a major overhaul. Mm-hmm. And, you know, some of the tourists, voices have been, you know, that it does not represent, you know, what you guys actually worked for so hard. I think fresh ideas are needed. You know, the city government can only do as much as any city government can do. And so at that point, I think, you know, doing something else, you know, with a special project or a special memory attached to it, will help to do that. Yeah.
Mm. Inga, we're going to go ahead and start bringing this thing here to a close, this interview here to a close. And it's not to say we don't want to hear you anymore. No, we love hearing from you. But I, you know, we got business to take care of. So in this, I'm going to let you say, you know, if you've got any closing remarks or anything you want to say, now is the time.
Great. Well, David, thank you very much for inviting me to this podcast here.
Anytime.
I really appreciate the opportunity and the time, and I hope to have brought a little bit more insight and new, fresh information from Berlin. I hope that we will stay in touch and continue this. Like I said, I'm encouraging everybody who's, you know, wanting to leave some remarks or share their ideas or, you know, just drop a line and say, hey, you know, good to hear from you. That would be wonderful. That would be great. And other than that, I wish everybody a wonderful weekday. It's almost 1 o'clock here already, Monday morning. But, you know, here again, you know, thank you very much for the opportunity. Have a good week, and talk to you soon, hopefully.
Well, Inga, I thank you, and I do apologize for keeping you up so late on this Sunday evening / early Monday morning, but know that, unfortunately, we are not going to be road marching in the morning, so you can go about your daily traffic. But as always, this is extending an invitation to you to join us if you have any updates on the current situation in Tempelhof and the city of Berlin, and especially in the McNair, Andrews, BB compound area. If there's anything going on over there, you're invited to come on and let us know what's going on. I think all of us would greatly appreciate, you know, just to know what's going on back at our second home. Again, I want to thank you for your time. Danke.
Gerne schön.
Have a bye. All right, bye-bye. Well, that brings an end to the interview. Now, we did have to omit some stuff because we were running way late on time, and it wouldn't be fair to our next guest to continue on into the next episode. But I think we really did cover a lot of topics. The only one that I really dread having to cut out of this was the question of where were you and what were your first thoughts when you heard the wall went down? And Inga has some very good insights and is able to tell some a really personal story on her part and that of her family. But tell you what, it's not gone forever, because once I get the archives back up, that story will go back into the archives. I'll incorporate it into one long podcast, so you'll be able to hear the entire interview in its entirety, not broken up into two, but you'll hear everything the way it the way it went on from beginning to end. Well, it's about time to wrap up this episode of the BerlinBrigade.com podcast. But before we bring this to a grinding or screeching halt, I want to extend an invitation to everyone to be on the podcast. If you want to got something to say, got something to tell us, we'd love to hear from you. Everybody would love to hear from you. So please drop me a note saying, hey, I want to be on the podcast at podcast@BerlinBrigade.com. That's the email address. PODCAST podcast@BerlinBrigade.com. This invitation is open to everyone. It doesn't matter who you are and what capacity you served in Berlin. What is important is that we want to hear from you. So please, drop us a note. The questions I will ask will not be too intense, but your answers can get as detailed and involved as you like. That's strictly up to you. Remember, this is your opportunity to talk, so join the conversation. Again, I want to thank Inga Nye for taking the time to be with us to talk about our old home. And for the next podcast, I have already another wonderful guest is lined up, and he is really excited to be joining us, and I was even more excited when he said yes when I asked him to join us. So next time, you're going to hear me say... Well, speaking of the wall coming down, where were you when you heard about it, and what were your impressions? So until next time, I am Dave Guerra. Thank you for listening to the BerlinBrigade.com podcast. First Sergeant, dismiss the company.